Good morning. I invite you to turn your Bibles to Ephesians chapter 4. Ephesians chapter 4 is where we'll get started from in just a minute. I want to ask you a question as we get started. Does anybody know who this guy is? I was going to say as I started, I'll give you $100 if you tell me who this guy is, but there's too many of y'all, and I thought the risk was too great. This is a guy by the name of Charles Ponzi. Charles Ponzi. This is a guy that, you know, like many people in the late 1800s, thought immigration into America was an opportunity. And for many people it was. It's an opportunity for a new life to start over. He was an Italian immigrant and had, growing up, kind of flunked out of school and not been able to find a foothold in a job. And so he came into America and he tried a few things, moved to Canada, and he came back to America and said, I think I've got an idea. You could send postage from America to Italy with some return postage included, and people could write back and forth. But with the international exchange rates being different, there was a unique way to make some money on stamps. So he started peddling his idea that, you know, if you wanted to invest some money with me, I could get you wildly rich. And, you know, normal investments at the time, typical 5% return on your investment in a bank. And so he was thinking, what if I offered 500%? What if I offered just an exorbitant amount in a very short period of time, maybe 30 or 45 days? And so we got some people to buy into it. Those people gave him money and said, hey, I'd like to make some money. And he got other people to give money. And the more people gave money, the more people he would use their money to pay back the other people. And these other people are walking around saying, hey, I made so much money off this investment with this guy, Charles Ponzi, that more and more people started investing. They'd show up at his house, show up at his bank to where back then he started making almost $250,000 a day from people giving him money. And that was millions and millions of dollars. And so this guy that couldn't find a foothold in anything was making himself very wealthy by taking people's investments and then paying off the people that had invested and then taking more people's money to pay theirs off. And it just got bigger and bigger until people are just throwing their money at this guy in the early 1900s. But of course, you know the name probably with the negative association of a Ponzi scheme. Really what he was doing was stealing from people because he never was able to monetize that business plan of his. And the government started looking at it and said, there's not enough stamps out there printed in the world that would equal this amount of money that this guy's got going. So after investigation and investigation, he was finally shut down, put in jail, put in prison for some period of time. And the last quote he had at the end of his life, he said this about his exploits to an American reporter. Speaking of his life and his Ponzi scheme, I'd given them the best show that was ever staged in their territory since the landing of the Pilgrims. It was easily worth $15 million to watch me put the thing over. So at the end of his life, I mean, he kind of looks back on it as, you know, it was good. For a little while, I was rich. For a little while, I made it. For a little while, I had everything I wanted at my fingertips and used his money to buy a lot of things for himself. But it was all one big lie. It's one big lie. You know, Ponzi made a name for himself that we still continue to use today. But how many of us are in a similar way using lies to manufacture things about our lives that aren't true? How many of us use lies on a daily basis to get ahead or get out of trouble or get out of things? Probably more than we would care to admit. I remember years ago, I asked this question to the congregation, raise your hand if you've never told a lie. And not even Anna's hand went up. I think the family knows she's only told one to this date, but it's still guilty. We're all guilty. We're all guilty of something that, from God's perspective, is super wrong. And I want to talk about our struggle with honesty today. with a concept that I've titled The Worst Lies of the Bible. And I got this from last week. Asher and I were watching SportsCenter's Not Top 10. So Asher likes seeing the top 10, but when you see the not top 10, it's like the worst examples in sports of people missing goals, missing balls, missing shots, missing catches, all those things. And it's pretty fun. So that got me thinking, hey, I wonder what, if I sat down and wrote a list, what would be the top 10 lies of the Bible? So that's what I did. And so our lesson, other than 3 points, you've got 10 points. So if you're concerned, I've tried to make them as short as I can and get the point across, and then we'll get out of here. I won't lie to you. I have no idea how long this is going to last. But hopefully it's not going to be too long. But that's what I want to do this morning. I want us to study together and think about, from a Bible example, what are the top 10 worst lies in the Bible, and what can we learn from those situations? And hopefully, since we're all in this together with a struggle that we all know we need to get better about, hopefully we can get better after studying this morning. I'm glad you're here. It's good to be with you. Kind of overcast, dreary, but man, y'all are fired up. Always love when Jason leads singing. I'm ready to go. I'm still standing after the song. So appreciate y'all being here. Singing was great this morning, and hope the lesson is helpful as well. So I wanted to start the kind of the lesson this morning by talking about just reminders about what God says about lying. And I got just 3 or 4 verses. There's a ton that we could look at. But I call your attention on one of the Ten Commandments from Exodus chapter 20, where God says, "You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor." You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. Now, when we think about bearing false witness, you might have a thought that false witness is saying, you know, something slanderous about someone else that isn't true. And that's what being a false witness is. But I think it encompasses the idea that God expects verbal truth. God expects us to tell the truth. God wants us to be people of truth. And so whether it's on the stand in a testimony about someone and their character or something I saw, or whether it's in our own house talking about someone or saying something to someone else, God always wants our yes to be yes and our no, no. He wants us to be people of integrity and people of truth. As a matter of fact, I mean, lying is one of the things that is called out in Proverbs 6, that if you want to just make a list of things God hates, lying's among them. 6 things the Lord hates, 7 that are an abomination to him: haughty eyes, a lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood, and we could continue to read them on. But I mean, look at the highlighted phrase there. You want something that really, really bothers God? Go tell a lie. That's something that God hates. It's an abomination to him. And again, not a word that we use to describe too many things, but it's not a good word. Number 3 from Ephesians 4, where I ask you to turn, you can read verse 25 again. After spending so many chapters elevating the majesty of Jesus Christ and his role in the church, he turns his attention to some personal things that we ought to be doing as we become new people, new creatures. As we put off our old way of life and put on the new self, he says, "Therefore, having put away falsehood, let each one of you speak the truth with his neighbor, for we're members of one another." Members of one another. There's some similarities between humans. We're all brothers and sisters in the grand scheme of things. All children of God. And so because we're one group of people, because we're one body and we're members of that body, it would seem very weird to lie to each other. I mean, imagine lying to yourself. Imagine your left hand lying to your right hand. None of that makes any sense. And so God calls us to something greater as Christians. Let each one of you speak the truth with his neighbor. And why does God care so much about truth? Why does God care that we not tell lies? Well, one of the most unique things about God is this part of his character. In the Hebrews chapter 6, when he talks about this great relationship and promise of eternal life we can have with God, he said, God gives you 2 promises. Number 1, he guarantees it with an oath, so that by 2 unchangeable things, in which it's impossible for God to lie, we who have fled for refuge might have strong encouragement to hold fast the hope set before us. So he's saying, look, God made a promise, which is encouraging. And the second thing is, it's impossible for God to break his promises. Like, God can't tell a lie. It's not in his nature. Like, it's just physically impossible, spiritually impossible, whatever word you want to use. God can't lie. It's not something that God can do. And that's why we can have confidence and trust in the things that God says. I mean, how disappointed would you be if after you die, God said, yeah, I was just making up the whole heaven thing. What? I mean, I spent my life sacrificing and suffering and serving you. And now you're going to turn around and tell me it was all a lie? None of us are thinking that. No, we have complete trust and confidence in God because it's impossible for God to tell us something that's untrue. Now, contrast that with the devil, who's the father of lies, who everything he says is a lie, and you get to see why God says, no, I want you to speak the truth to each other. When we tell the truth, we're being like God. When we tell a lie, we're being like Satan. And so to that end, I want you to think seriously about this. This is not a small thing to God. This is not a joke. This is not a minor problem. This is a big deal. And if you're here this morning and you're sitting there thinking, did his wife, you know, did my wife tell me to tell him to preach on this? Is he talking to me? Does he know something about my life? Now, I know the consistency with which we fail in this regard. Because while all of us have told a lie in our life, I mean, how many of you have told a lie this past week? Or yesterday? In some small or big thing. And it's hard for us when we start to analyze ourselves to not feel a little bit uncomfortable about this. So let's jump right into the top 10 then. And we'll start with number 10 and think about the top 10 lies of the Bible. And I would love to hear yours if it didn't make the list, because there were several that I had to leave out. And as I started studying the lesson, one of the things that jumped out to me was there's a lot of lies in the Bible. I had a lot to choose from. And there's a lot of lies from a lot of good people in the Bible. So it wasn't like these are the most nefarious characters. Tons of them from Genesis. Tons of them from the fathers of the faithful. The most religious people. People in the New Testament. There's dishonesty on every page. And so we're struggling with good company here as we talk about lies. Well, Jezebel's not good company. She's my number 10. The story from 1 Kings 21 and verse 13 that Jezebel had told about Naboth. Do you remember the story where Ahab was the king of Israel? And Ahab was somebody that, he was a bad guy. He was a bad king. He married a bad girl, Jezebel. And in that relationship, they were just toxic, right? They made each other worse. I think she was a big part of the problem. But in this particular situation, Ahab wanted a piece of land and property from somebody else. Now, normally you'd have to wait for property to go on the market, but not when you're a king. You can just kind of go say, hey, I'd like your land. And Ahab was trying to do the right thing. He said, I'll take this piece of land. I'll give you something different. I'll give you something better. But it's near a particular house of mine. I'd like to have it. God had warned people not to give away their property and sell out because God had given them this promised land. So their inheritance was a special thing to them. And Naboth kind of responded with that. And he said, you know, I can't give you the inheritance of my fathers. And so Jezebel said, I got an idea. We'll just kill him and take his land. And so she concocted a scheme where she was going to put Naboth up in front of a bunch of people. And guess what happened? She wrote letters saying, proclaim a fast, and set Naboth at the head of the people, and they set two worthless men opposite him. And let them bring a charge against him, saying, you have cursed God and the king. Then take him out and stone him to death. And it's exactly what happened in verse 13. The two worthless men came in and sat opposite him, and the worthless men brought a charge against Naboth in the presence of the people, saying, Naboth cursed God and the king. So they took him outside the city and stoned him to death with stones. And they sent to Jezebel, saying, Naboth has been stoned and is dead. I mean, there's something especially egregious about this lie. It isn't just a mild thing that, you know, we're just kind of getting out of some trouble for a minute, or, you know, I'm kind of cheating a little bit and fudging some numbers. This cost a guy his life. And it was all to take some property that this guy wanted. And even though there were two worthless men that did it, it was Jezebel's idea, and so I'm holding her accountable here, that she would concoct such a scheme that really was focused on dishonesty. Now, she could have just killed him, and that would have been murder. But no, let's make our hands clean. Let's make it look good. Let's make it look like a righteous killing, like this guy's a heathen blasphemer. This guy's the problem. And so she had his peers kill him willingly by lying about the kind of man he was. It's a bad one. It made my top 10, and I think it teaches me one thing about lying that maybe will resonate with you. Do you ever use lying sometimes to get something that you want? Is that how you use lying a lot? When you think of telling a lie, I mean, there's a lot of things that may come to your mind, and we'll cover a lot of those, but do you ever use lying to just get something that you want? People lie on their resume. They say they did something that they didn't do in order to make themselves look better. Do you ever lie on your social media? Do you ever lie when someone asks you what your weight is? What your height is? What your age is? Now, I remember as a kid, people would love to get fake IDs. They're 21, so I could go do something wrong. That's what people wanted to do, right? Sometimes we will tell a story and concoct a lie just to get what we want. And if you do that, you're in good company with Jezebel, because that's the kind of mentality she did with the truth, would just lie to get her way. Number 9, back in Genesis chapter 12, I want you to appreciate the story for a minute as we make our trek through Genesis, that lying is not just something that someone like Jezebel does. Lying is something that all of us can do. And Abraham, when he was called by God in Genesis 12, to trek west toward Canaan, Abraham did that. Abram at the time. And in doing that, he was running through some foreign countries. And if you've ever been overseas, it makes you feel uncomfortable when you're in a foreign land. And Abram felt extremely uncomfortable because in a brutal time in society like that, where there's not national news and there's not some UN or NATO police force kind of helping out, you've got just yourself completely vulnerable. And he's married to someone he felt was beautiful. And so when he's going down to Egypt, he says, I know that you're a beautiful woman in verse 12. And when the Egyptians see you, they will say, this is his wife, and they'll kill me. They'll let you live. Say you are my sister, that it may go well with me because of you, and that my life may be spared for your sake. And so what Abraham did is, in effect, have this whole thing play out, even though we don't have it verbally said here. At some point, this was said and implied that this would happen, that he just said, oh yeah, you know, this is my sister, we're just traveling together. He implied that they weren't married. Now, there might have been some relation here, as people tended to do with their tribes and families, but it wasn't something that was completely true. And in this situation, Abram lies to Pharaoh, and in lying to Pharaoh, causes him to have a problem with God, because God doesn't want him to have another man's wife. And so they're already married, and so Pharaoh calls Abram and says, what is this you've done to me? Why did you not tell me she was your wife? Why did you say she was your sister? And I think in general, this is where a lot of us trip up. You know, many of us just won't come out and tell a complete fabrication. What we like to do is mix a little bit of the truth with a little bit of a lie to come up with something that's more palatable to where we don't feel super bad. You know, that's what we do, half-truths. We might not completely avoid paying our taxes, but if we cut a few corners, that's going to be okay. How many of us feel less guilty because it's just a half-truth when we tell somebody something that's almost true? Well, of course, like Pharaoh said, it's just a lie. I mean, what you told me wasn't true. You were trying to imply something that wasn't right. So you could see through the deception. And for many of us, we want to say something that is almost true, and it sounds true, and it might be plausible, but it's not really true when it comes down to it. We sugarcoat things, we change things, and we use half-truths, but this is still a lie. Number 9. Number 8. You almost don't even have to change the words here. Abram, Abraham, told a lie to a man in chapter 20, if you scoot over, which was the exact same thing. I really didn't have to change the slide because Abraham over in chapter 20 has the same situation come up where he says, Abram said of Sarah, his wife, in verse 2, she is my sister. And so Abimelech, king of Gerar, sent and took Sarah. But God came to Abimelech in a dream by night and said to him, behold, you're a dead man because of the woman whom you've taken, for she is a man's wife. Now Abimelech had not approached her, so he said, Lord, will you kill an innocent people? Did he not himself say to me, she is my sister? And she herself said, he is my brother. So here Abimelech is recounting a conversation straight up from Abraham. Not only from Abraham, but from Sarah. She is my sister. Yep, he's my brother. That's exactly what happened. Well, what do you learn from this example? I mean, to me, in number 8, this is what I really learned. Lying is something that can easily turn into a habit. Lying is not something that people just like to do once. It's something that once we get comfortable doing it, it's just going to be our go-to whenever we're faced with a challenge or a struggle. Whenever you get in trouble, what do? You just lie about it. How do you feel about politicians today? Do you think politicians are telling you the truth? Probably not. Why? Because they've been caught lying to us? What's the consequences for lying? Well, nothing really. We're just going to lie. And so we build a reputation. We build some kind of consciousness that if there's ever a situation where I can benefit from telling a falsehood, that's what I'm going to do. And that's what people do. Now, the scary thing is, this is what I'm going to challenge you with, it can become such a part of your character, it's hard to get out. I don't know if I would say it's as addictive as tobacco or other drugs, but let me tell you, it's hard to stop lying once you've gotten into the habit. You'll come up with a lie for no reason. You'll just tell a lie even when you're not in trouble. You'll just make up something at any turn and be like, yeah, this is okay. You'll concoct stories. You'll come up with things because you think maybe it's going to benefit me. But look, lying can turn into a habit. Where did Abraham come up with this in chapter 20? He'd already been doing this since chapter 12. Okay, this is something that was, it was not good. It was causing problems with other people. Now you might say, hey, well, I don't see God getting upset at him or God getting mad at him. No, let me tell you, God includes the good and the bad in the Bible. And you don't have to have everybody die to understand and appreciate that lying is not a good thing. And so sometimes God just gives us insight into the weak areas of people's faith and their life and their situation. And again, think of it. What has God already promised him? You're going to have a family, I'm going to take care of you, and you're going to live in this land. And so that of necessity means your wife's going to survive and everything's going to be okay. And yet in these moments of weakness, they both are like, nah, you better just tell everybody you're my sister. That'll make things easier on us. Lying can turn into a habit. Number 7 in Genesis 27, lying again. I told you I got stuck in Genesis, but all these things are here. In Genesis 27, Jacob to Isaac. Now, this is a famous story where you remember the situation where Isaac is going to bless at the end of his life his child. He's going to bless Esau, the oldest. And when Isaac's wife, Rebekah, heard of it, she said, hey, you know what? I've got a plan. Jacob, this is what we're going to do. I want you to dress up like your brother. Now, he looks a little different. He feels a little different. Thankfully, your father's blind. And so what you're going to do, you're going to smell like him. You're going to cook like him. I'm going to prepare some things. You're going to go in there, and you're going to get the blessing. You're going to get the inheritance. You're going to get the birthright. You're going to get taken care of. All these things. And in this situation, you know what Jacob does? Jacob says, yes, ma'am. He goes and does everything just like his mom wants to do. And he goes in there, and he pretends to be Esau. And of course, Esau comes in, he's frustrated, he's angry, and he wants to kill him. All because of a lie. Who is at fault? Well, Jacob's at fault. But really, the thing I took away from this story, lie number 7, is we can be encouraged to lie by other people. Have you ever been in that situation? I mean, when you think about that, you think about Jacob's deception. But it was his mom's encouragement of saying, just obey my voice. Do what I tell you, and everything's going to work out. I'm not going to ask for a show of hands, but how many of you have been encouraged to lie by somebody else and end up doing it? We got some hands. I can't help it. It happens. People say, hey, I got a good idea. We're going to be able to handle this. This is going to be best for both of us. And I'm going to lie, but I need you to lie. Well, how did that end for Jacob? Not good. Years of separation from his brother, fear, worry, concern, always thinking about what he did to Esau and handling it in this way. And so, having lied to him, family problems abound. And so, number seven, this stuck out to me because of the lesson. We can be encouraged to lie. Lie number six, and this is just, I mean, there's a whole point we can make about family problems, but Jacob lied and felt the consequences, and later on, he was lied to and felt the consequences. I mean, what a sad situation, but you remember the story of Jacob's sons and their situation with Joseph. In Genesis 27, we don't have the time to read all of it, but in Genesis 27, Joseph and his brothers had problems. And they had problems because Joseph was the favorite. And their brothers got so angry with him that they couldn't speak peaceably to him. And so they decided, after a lot of planning, we're going to sell him into slavery. We're going to just put him in this pit. Maybe somebody will kill him. Maybe we'll kill him. Well, let's talk ourselves out of it. A lot of discussion in Genesis 37 about what they should do. Eventually, he is sold. And when somebody came back to get him, they found what had happened. Then they concocted this scheme where they took the coat that his dad made for him, covered it in animal blood, and brought it back to their father and simply said to him, and I paraphrase here, hey, have you seen this cloak before? Have you seen this cloak? Is this your son's cloak? I don't know. It looks pretty bad. Rips, tears, blood. Yeah, I don't know. Here you go, Dad. And so Jacob begins to believe one of the most difficult lies in the Bible, that his son is dead. And so for years, he's going to live with this reality that the son he cared for the most is gone. All because of a lie. Is that divine retribution? I mean, is God saying to Jacob, hey, you deserve this because the way things went down with Esau? It's not fun to be lied to. I won't make you feel it. I don't know if that's true. But let me tell you, this lie, man, your just heart breaks for Jacob knowing Joseph's a lie. As they lied to him, we found this cloak. You know, what did this lie represent? I think this is one of the most important points of the lesson. Number six, we use lies to get out of other sins we've gotten into. You see, they didn't just sit back and say, no, let's just concoct a lie. Let's tell a lie to our dad. Let's just lie today. That wasn't their plan at all. Their plan was to do something mean to their brother. That was the problem. That was the sin. And in doing that sin, that compounded other issues. Well, now we can't just, now he's gone? What are we going to do? Well, I can't go back and own up to my mistakes and say, hey, we sold him. Dad, I'm sorry, we made a dumb decision. Let's go see if we can find him. I'll trail the traitors and see if maybe we could get him back. I don't know what happened. They didn't do that. Where they came up with a lie was because they weren't good people in other areas of their life. That's the challenge for us. That's where many of us slip up with lies. We lie because I'm not a good person in other areas of my life. And that's exactly what happened here. They fabricated this whole thing and they were good at it because they hated their brother. And I ask you the question, do you ever use lies to get out of your mistakes that you made? It's a pretty common thing. We could look at a bunch of those in the Bible. 1 Kings 13, this one's a little unusual, but I wanted to include it, lie number five, because of its unique nature. Do you remember the story of the young prophet and the old prophet? In 1 Kings 13, Jeroboam in the divided kingdom had started making a mess of the worship God had set up for Israel. So instead of going to Jerusalem to the temple to worship, In a divided kingdom, he was afraid people are going to like Rehoboam's kingdom and go stay there. So he said, I'm going to make you a place to worship Israel. And he set up priests from every tribe, and they worshiped on different days, and they went to Dan and Bethel, and he set up these calves, and of course, God was not happy with it. God sent a prophet to tell him what was going to happen to him in coming days, that God was going to judge him for this, and God judged him then. But God gave this prophet a unique message. God said, I don't want you to go back home the way you came. And the king asked him, come home with me and refresh yourself. I'll give you a reward. And the man of God said to the king, if you give me half your house, I will not go in with you. And I will not eat bread or drink water in this place. For so it was commanded me by the word of the Lord, saying, you shall neither eat bread nor drink water nor return by the way you came. So he went another way and did not return by the way he came to Bethel. And so he told the king, hey, God gave me this unique command, but I'm going to do it. I'm not going to eat with you. I'm not going to stay here. And I'm leaving by a different way. And when this man heard about the situation, he was a prophet too, an older prophet. He said, saddle my donkey. I want to spend some time with this guy. What was it like to hear this message from God? How did things go? You're a little bit of a celebrity right now. I want to spend some time with you. And he comes and he asks him. And the young man says, look, I can't do this because God told me not to. And this old man tells him a lie and basically said, oh, an angel spoke to me and told me that God said it was okay for you to come back to my house. And so the young prophet relented because this guy basically said he heard a word from God. And do you remember what happened to this young prophet at the end of it? God used the old prophet to prophesy to him and tell him, because you disobeyed the word of the Lord, you're going to be punished. And as he went away, a lion met him on the road in verse 24 and killed him, and his body was thrown in the road, and the donkey stood beside it. The lion also stood beside the body. This guy was punished because he believed a lie. Let me spend just a minute on this. We think about dishonesty in certain ways. I told a lie to get out of something. I told a lie to get something. But we don't generally think about being on the receiving end of a lie and what a problem it can be for us. But let me tell you in just a simple way that if you believe a lie from somebody else, it can still hurt you. That's why we're so concerned every day to try to teach and reflect the truth. Because if I come up here and tell you, hey, listen, if you give me 20 bucks, you'll go to heaven. That would just hurt you. Because you'd be out 20 bucks and you wouldn't go to heaven. You could be hurt by that. And there are people today that believe all sorts of things. You can live however you want to live. You can believe what you want to believe. You can find your own path. You can do your own thing. And all those things end up hurting you, even though you're not the one telling the lie. So lies can hurt you just by believing them. And that's why it made my list at number five. Number four, and we're getting to probably some of the ones you had thought about on your own and remember. From Matthew 26, we get Peter's great lie. Hard to think of the Apostle Peter telling a lie, right? Especially one so damning as saying he doesn't believe or know Jesus the Christ. For somebody that already confessed Jesus in the good confession that he made, it's like, I believe you're the Christ, the Son of God, and yet on the night Jesus is going to be crucified and he's led away to be tried, Peter had something very different to say. And in verse 69, as Peter was sitting outside in the courtyard, a servant girl came up to him and said, you were also with Jesus the Galilean. But he denied it before them all, saying, I don't know what you mean. And when he went out to the entrance, another servant girl saw him, and she said to the bystanders, this man was with Jesus of Nazareth. And again, he denied it with an oath. I do not know the man. And after a little while, the bystanders came up and said to Peter, certainly you too are one of them, for your accent betrays you. Then he began to invoke a curse on himself and swear, I do not know the man. Peter told a lie to a bunch of people that he wasn't a Christian. He didn't know Jesus. He didn't believe in him. And when I think about the lessons you can learn from this, there are many, and we could spend more time talking about this particular instance. We could talk about his weakness in standing up for Christ and our struggle to lie about our faith and hide our faith and hide it under a bushel. But the thing that really sticks out to me is how even when people know he's not telling the truth, he would just continue to lie over and over again. Now, doesn't that seem dumb? But I've seen it happen. Like, we caught you red-handed. Yeah, it wasn't me. I didn't do it. And these people are coming up to Peter. They're like, we know it's you. We know you were with Jesus over and over again. He's like, nope, I'll give you an oath and a promise. I'll swear on the Bible. I'll invoke a curse on myself. That was not me. I did not know him. And how did that make Peter look? Just makes Peter look dumb and dumber. That he would not just lie once, but even when he's caught, he will continue to lie over and over and over again. Let me tell you, the truth always will set you free. A lie, you just dig in your grave deeper and deeper and deeper. Can I get an amen from the parents? Tell the truth. I mean, be out with it. I mean, let the truth free you from all this stuff. But when they know you're lying, and you know you're lying, you're just making yourself look dumb. Like Peter for three times. Over and over again. I don't know the man. Number three, one of my favorite stories in the Old Testament, 2 Kings 5, and I'll just recount this one briefly for you. It's a great story of Naaman, the Syrian, getting healed of his leprosy. Well, this isn't even a Christian, an Israelite. He wasn't a Hebrew, he wasn't a Jew, but he heard about the miracles that Jehovah could do. And so he wanted to come down there and get healed of his leprosy. And after some haggling about where he should end up going and dipping, he went and dipped 7 times in the Jordan River and was cleansed of an incurable illness. And at that moment, he did what a lot of people would do. Let me say thank you. Let me give you some money. Let me give you some clothes, some change of clothes. I'll give you new clothes. I'll give you cash. I'll give you camels. Whatever it is you want, I will take care of you. And Elisha said, no, it's not time for these kind of things. You just go back your way. And he wanted to take some dirt home as a souvenir. And he's like, y'all forgive me because I'm going back to a pagan place, but I believe in Jehovah. And at that moment, the servant of Elisha, Gehazi, had a thought. It seems bad to let all this money go to waste. I mean, after all, this guy got cleansed of his leprosy. Let's just take a little bit. And so he followed after Naaman, and said, hey, there's some guys that just showed up at the house. All that stuff you were going to give us might be beneficial and useful. Can we have it? He's like, yeah, sure. Be pleased to take this stuff. So he takes all the things back home. And then he comes out, and then Elisha says to him, the most dreaded question, where have you been? Now, there's a lot of things you could say at that moment. A lot of things come to your mind. And Gehazi did the one thing that most people probably do. He just said, I didn't go anywhere. I didn't do anything. I've been right here. Oh, you're wondering where I've been? No, this is where I've been. I've been here. And I love the verse afterward where Elisha, again, a prophet who's done some wild miracles in this very text, after saying to him, I didn't go anywhere. I want to read it. He says to him in verse 26, did not my heart go with you when the man turned from his chariot to meet you? And what this tells me from this lie and this example is how foolish lies look to God. This guy's a prophet of God. He's blessed by God. He had the insight that only God could give him. And Elisha's watching him do it the whole time. And so when he asks the question, where have you been? And kids, this is just a pro tip. Your parents already know the answer. Where have you been? The correct answer is only the truth. And hear what Gehazi says is such a bald-faced lie. I went nowhere. And what was Elisha's response? I saw you. I saw you. Let me share this truth with you. God sees everything. There's not a secret thing that's going to be hidden from God that won't be revealed. God's going to see everything. He knows everything. And so lying is one of the most silly things you can do to God because God knows the truth. And poor Gehazi learned that lesson too late, because he inherited the leprosy that Naaman had been cleansed from, and he got nothing. Number two, I want you to turn to Acts chapter 5, and we'll read this real briefly, and we're just about done. Lie number two, the lie of Ananias and Sapphira to Peter. And I think this is one of those, I don't know why it made it so high on my list, other than this. It was something that was New Testament, it was something that the church was dealing with, and it was something that God personally killed two people over. And so there was something serious enough about it to where I'm like, man, this needs to be high up on the list. And they did what a lot of Christians did. In verse 1, they sold a piece of property, and they were going to give it to the church. That's a good thing, right? But with his wife's knowledge, he kept back for himself some of the proceeds and brought only a part of it and laid it at the apostles' feet. And so you got to kind of read into it here, but this is what's happening. Imagine if I came up to the church and I was like, hey, we're going to sell a car and I'm going to give all the money to the church. Everybody's doing good things and they're donating money. We sold our land or we sold our car and I wanted you to have the money, the proceeds. Well, that would be good, right? It would make me look good. People would be like, oh, that's real generous that he did that. Well, there's a problem. I kept back part of the money for myself, but I still made it appear like God's getting the full amount. So there's some greed here. There's obvious hypocrisy, but it's a lie. Because Peter asks right here at the beginning, says, Ananias, why has Satan filled your heart to lie to the Holy Spirit and keep back for yourself part of the proceeds of the land? While it remained unsold, did it not remain your own? And after it was sold, was it not at your disposal? Why is it that you have contrived this deed in your heart? You have not lied to men, but to God. And when he heard these words, he fell down and breathed his last. And the same question later was asked in verse 8 to his wife. Tell me whether you sold the land for so much? And she, in effect, says, oh yeah, that's the right amount. Yeah. Did you sell the land for $200,000? Yeah. And she dies too. What lesson do I learn from that? Here's what I learned from it. Small lies to God are still big problems. Now, when you think about the grand scheme of this situation, it's not like people are chopping babies' heads off or are drowning puppies. People are giving large sums of voluntary money to the church, and all they did was fudge a couple numbers and, you know, try to make it themselves look a little better. We all kind of feel bad for Ananias and Sapphira. I mean, this is not the worst people in the world. Why is God killing them? And here's the lesson for us. Great fear, it said, fell upon the church, because we serve a living God. It's a fearful thing to fall into his hands, for our God's a consuming fire. You don't walk up to God and tell him a lie. God demands and expects the truth, and he even had the kindness to offer Ananias, his wife, an out. Tell me how much you sold it for. That last chance, she didn't take it. No, that was right. She didn't even know her husband was dead. And the same people that carried him out carried her out. That's how serious it is to God. This is not some fanciful, deep, dark Old Testament story. This is something that happened to Christians today. Lying ought not to be a part of our character. Last point, lie number one. Surely you guessed it by now. Genesis chapter 3 and verse 4, Satan lying to Eve. It's got to be the number one lie in the Bible. It's the thing that started it all. It's the number one problem. And what was that lie? God said, listen, I don't want you to eat of this one tree. You can have anything else here. And the day you eat of it, there's going to be a consequence. You're going to die. And Satan has a conversation with Eve later. And he says to her, you know, the day you eat of it, you're not going to die. As a matter of fact, good things are going to happen. Your eyes are going to open and you're going to be like God. This is the knowledge of good and evil. God is trying to keep you from this great benefit to yourself. You're not going to die. And what a lie this was. What a lie that's still being told today. The takeaway from this, point number one, is that we don't think, and we have a tendency not to think, our sins are that big of a deal. We just don't think they are. You know, we think we can do something wrong and there's not going to be any consequences, even though God's already told us how to live and God told us what He expects. And we can look at that reality and the things that God has said, and we can listen to Satan every day. That's like, no, you just go take life and just grab it and do whatever you want. You go live for yourself. There's going to be no consequences. You just live for you and be happy. God wants you to be happy. You're going to be more like God if you do whatever you want. That was Satan's lie. And man, people believe that lie today. And you may be here this morning and you may be thinking, man, have I believed that lie? Am I living that lie? Have I been told that lie? And I know it's not true, but I still just think, yeah, let's just give it a shot. Let me just live this life for me and see what's on the other side. Let me tell you, there's stories of pain in the Bible from where dishonesty leads, both for people that tell it and people that receive it. And if you're here this morning and lying has been a part of your character, I'll leave you with this verse from Revelation 21:8. The one that conquers will have this heritage, speaking of heaven. I will be his God and he will be my son. But as for the cowardly and the faithless, detestable, murderers, sexually immoral, sorcerers, idolaters, and all liars, their portion will be in the lake that burns with fire and sulfur, which is the second death. God takes this serious. To the world, it's just part of our normal human behavior. But to God, this represents the antithesis of who He is and His character. We're to be people of truth in our dealings with each other, in our dealings with Him, and in our life. And if you need to make your life right with God, we want you to do it this morning. And God wants you to confess those things you've done that are wrong. And if you're here this morning and you're willing to make that confession, then confess those to God. You're not confessing them to me. But if you want to make that confession that you believe that Jesus is the Son of God and you're ready to live different and you want to be baptized in water for your sins forgiveness, when you put all those things together, man, you can be a Christian this morning and be freed from everything you've ever done. Because I tell you, if you're sitting here this morning and you're like, oh man, I've been living this lie. I'm living a lie right now. I'm Charles Ponzi. That's me. You know, God can wipe all those things away. You mean I'm not going to jail? No, you still may go to jail. There may be some earthly consequences. But let me tell you, the greatest thing I can offer you this morning, you won't have to answer to God. Jesus already paid that price for you. And if you'll accept that price on faith, God will forgive you of every lie you've ever told. It's the best thing I can offer you this morning. It's the best deal you'll get all week. Why don't you come forward as we stand and sing together?